I'm Eric Warista.
This is Noam Shore.
And you're listening to The Last Team on Turf, a New England Revolution fan podcast. Noam, Messi played on the turf.
Not only did he play on turf, he played all 90 minutes, scored 2 goals and an assist. But, you know, the whole time I felt the game really wasn't about even the score or how many goals or assists he had. It was just a night of soccer unlike I've ever experienced or seen or been to.
Yeah, just an incredible atmosphere in the stadium. When Messi came out to lead Inter Miami out for warm-ups, you know, the crowd went nuts. People were cheering goals he was scoring in warm-ups, which was
right.
Sort of strange.
He hit a top bin shot into the top left of the goal, and everyone started cheering. At that point, we were in the upper deck for our first half, since I don't know how to beat you in rock, paper, scissors.
That's right. So for everyone listening, we had 4 tickets to this game. We had our usual 2 tickets down close, right on the 18-yard line. And then we had to actually buy 2 other tickets, which we bought, which were in the mezzanine section, directly across the field.
Right. Right, which was an interesting experience. I can talk more about that.
Yeah,
but we
decided to rock, paper, scissors for who had the first half down low and then who had the second half down low, which seemed like it was going to be important because the thought was that Messi might only play the first 60 minutes or the last 30. And so he ended up playing the whole game. It ended up not really mattering who had the team.
Right, right. Yeah, and it was a different perspective up there. Not always flattering for the Revolution, I might add, from a strategic level. But as you were saying, even when the Revs were already out for warm-ups during the official warm-up time, the Revs came out, they were doing all their drills, and where is Miami? And there was all this sort of security presence and cameras and press in the corner where Miami was supposed to come out. But it wasn't until like 15 minutes into the warm-up period where the team finally came out, and it's very dramatic, 2 columns of players. It's not like when the Revs come out, 1 or 2 come out at a time and they get going. Like the whole team walks out and everyone was just waiting. My son and I were in the corner opposite where they come out, and everyone was just looking. And when he came out, like, parents were putting their kids on top of the seats so they could stand and see. It was like a religious experience. You know, the last time I was at a sporting event, a stadium event at this size, was actually in Foxborough, seeing the Grateful Dead in 1990. And people would just hang on to everything that Jerry Garcia did, right? And Messi is kind of like that type of person. Like, people come and travel and spend a lot of money to go see the greatest player of all time. And like you said, people were cheering the warm-ups. It's almost like the game was... Yeah, that was part of the story, of course, but it was just to watch everything that Messi did.
Yeah, it was really incredible. I mean, he came over, well, we were in the 12th row in the first half, and then he came over to take a throw-in, and these 2 guys that were maybe in the 3rd row stood up and were like waving and yelling and trying to get Messi to acknowledge them in some way. They were looking for some sort of acknowledgement from the king, and it just seemed bizarre to me because I didn't know what they wanted him to do. Like, he could have nodded or waved, and you know, he's in the middle of the game, he didn't do it. Although I will say he did acknowledge the crowd a couple of times late in
right.
the second half, after the 90th minute, with the game fully decided at that point. And
right,
you know,
yeah,
just,
there was an injury time period where Nacho Hill was down, and people just started chanting Messi's name, and he very nicely waved to the crowd, and it just got everyone even more riled up.
Yeah, and the closest thing I can think of it for me, you know, I have a couple of analogs. One is when Michael Jordan played for the Wizards, I got to see him play in D.C., and, you know, it was a similar thing. I think we bought a ticket in the upper deck, and we're just happy to be in the building. But every time Jordan touched the ball, there was this buzz that went through the crowd that was completely electric, and people, you know, you didn't know what he was going to do. And, you know, he didn't disappoint either. I think he scored 24 points or something that night, which is pretty pedestrian for Jordan, but Messi has this incredible sense of the moment and just this ability to deliver better than advertised. I mean, he had 2 goals in this game, 1 assist, easily could have had a 3rd goal along with right. the assist. You know, it was a kind of put it where Ravis could get it, and the rebound went to one of his teammates who scored. So, you know, just an just kind of an astounding event. And then the other thing it reminded me of, besides the Jordan game, was this is actually the game that broke the regular season record for the Revs, but also the all-time record for the Revs, which was previously set at MLS Cup 2002, which was hosted at Foxborough Stadium, but the Revs made it to and lost. So I was at that game too. So I can claim to be at the 2 most highly attended Revs games in history, albeit 22 years apart, which is sort of hard to believe.
That's pretty amazing. And that's pretty cool to have been to both of those games. Both of those games were unfortunately Revs losses.
Right. Right. Which is, you know, we kind of mentioned this last week that historically, we don't, and I think we mentioned it last season too, the Revs tend not to play well when there's a big crowd there. Or yeah. They don't get a good result when there's a big crowd.
Right. Well, this game started off a little bit differently, and there's more I want to talk about Messi in this game. The Revs scored in the first minute, but I think before the 60-second mark.
Yeah, 47 seconds. Ball. Yeah.
47 seconds. It was a long ball to Chankalai. And by the way, that was really all the Revs could do. The whole game was long balls. But it was a long ball that was misplayed by the Miami goalkeeper, and Chankalai had a very nice chip over the goalkeeper as a result, scored. And there was quite a roar. I have not heard a cheer from 65,000 people when the Revs scored. So that was a nice moment. And it kind of gave you this glimmer of hope that, well, maybe the Revs can do something here, put Miami on their back heels and have the crowd behind them. And you thought that maybe they could build on that, do something with that. And at first they kind of did. They were stifling Messi. It's interesting to watch Messi because he doesn't, at least during this game, and partly because he didn't have to, even in the first 20, 30 minutes, he just kind of walks around the pitch and then waits for his opportunity of magic, which he almost all the time does really well with, even if it's a more mundane play. He's just perfect with it and ends up setting up something. But the Revs were playing Miami pretty tight. In fact, I could see a couple times Kessler had his hand on Messi's back trying to be a little bit physical with him. And then Messi got a little angry at Kessler at one point, kind of put him in a headlock. But that was about it because Messi scored a minute later. But even by the 30th minute, and you could really see this from the second level in the mezzanine, the Revs just could not get the ball out of their own half without long balls over the top. And who do you have over the top? You didn't have Rioni starting, so you had Chankalai or Boateng or Nacho Heal, 3 of the Revs' shortest players trying to get long balls. And it just was not effective at all. And Miami just kept pressing and pressing. And eventually, Ravas kicks a long ball that Miami makes him pay for and get that first tying goal. And it was kind of over from there.
Right. The Revs never really threatened after that, besides that first goal. And you're right. They had some stretches of possession that kind of never went anywhere, but they had a lot of trouble playing out of the back, a lot of turnovers in their own half, and just possession given away very cheaply. So it was I think a tough night for the Revs. Even though it did start pretty brightly.
So another thing about Messi, like as I mentioned, he didn't seemed to do that much for large portions of the game, except walk around the pitch and wait for his opportunities. Clearly, he doesn't have the defensive responsibilities that he might have had back in the day with Barcelona or the Argentinian national team. But he gets into the right spots. He makes the perfect run. And his goals almost seemed like undramatic in a sense, like they were so easy. Right. But that's because that's what he does. He understands and reads the game so well, and he has great partnership with Busquets and other players on the team that he doesn't have to do that much to make a huge impact. And the rest of the team, you know, buzzes around, and then the Revs can't keep track of him. And there you go. And he's wide open twice, almost a third, as you say. And
yeah, assist. I mean, it's really something to see, because 68,000 people in the stands and 22 players on the field know who the most dangerous player out there is. And yet five times a game, he pops up, you know, between the penalty spot and the six with the ball, with nobody around him. It's just an incredible sight. You wonder, how can this be? But they're so good at...
Yeah, how can that happen?
Yeah, they're so good at the just moving off the ball, and there's some very good passers on that team. But you have to say, like, you know, it's so hard, because you have to choose, do you want Messi to beat you, or do you want his teammates to beat you? And I think most coaches would say, well, we're going to sell out and try to stop Messi at all costs, whether we have to, you know, put two guys on him or whatever. We're going to rather take our chances that someone else is going to beat us, because they're not as good as Messi. But it seemed like they were trying that in the first half. I mean, they were, as you say, much more physical. They were trying to kind of almost rough him up, which is a little bit of a dangerous game, because you would think the referees would be quick to pull a yellow or worse, if you're being overly physical with Messi. But and also at the same time, it's not like the Revs are the first team that's probably ever tried that. So I don't know what you could do, but you can keep the ball a bit more and not turn it over in your own half. I mean, that's kind of like it. The fear going into this game was that's been the Achilles heel of the Revs all season, is turnovers in their own half,
right,
and failure to hold on to the ball.
Yeah, like you said, a number of teams struggle against Miami and Messi, and despite all the hours and hours of game tape that you can watch him to prepare for and seemingly defend him, it's not that easy in real time. And to your point about playing physically, true, the Revs did try and rough things up slightly, but there were no yellow cards, I think, the entire game from either team. The whole game kind of had a feel of an exhibition match. Just the idea of over 65,000 people at a game, it kind of felt like you were playing national teams, like a really good national team against, you know, or local team. But it was a very kind of tame, you know, match in terms of some of the fireworks that you might see from regular MLS club play. And in a way, it emphasized the skill of the players on the field. And Miami just has a much better team right now. Obviously, the Revs are at the bottom, only one win, one tie. I think they're 1-8-1 right at this point, 1-7-1. And you could really see the difference there. And especially from the mezzanine level, you could just see tactically how challenging it is for the Revs to play effectively out of the back and to do some of those basics. They're really missing a number 9 striker that could maybe open things up a little bit. But after that first goal, I'm not sure the Revs actually had a real shot on net after that point. Maybe one, but there was nothing dangerous.
I'm just looking at the numbers here. So they were a lot more physical, as you said. You're right. Just one shot on goal for the game. That's it.
For the entire game, they had one shot on goal
the entire game. So very high shooting percentage, but only 7 shots. Miami 13 shots, 7 on goal, 4 went in. And then and
that one shot on game, by the way, is without Messi really doing any pressing.
Right.
So up top with very little press of the ball.
It was really a goalkeeper error that created that goal. Still not the easiest of finishes, and it was a good pass and a good finish, but they scored the same way Miami did on sort of a mistake. And then to your point about, you know, there were no yellow cards in the match and only 4 fouls on the Revs the entire game, which is, yeah,
that's amazing.
Miami had 10 fouls, just to give it some perspective.
That is interesting. Well, it was a magical night. I just the spectacle, so many people in the stands, the World's Game right there at Foxborough Stadium, people from all over the world, so excited to see the greatest of all time, World Cup winner. I think certainly coming off of the most dramatic World Cup final ever in history just added that much more to his presence being there. But it was truly, as a sports fan, something that was exciting to be a part of and something I'll remember forever.
Yeah, it was really a great night. And I just really quickly wanted to recap the top five Revs attendance of all time. So this was number one. Number two was the 2002 MLS Cup Final. And let me know if you remember any of these games. So number three was 1997, New England versus Tampa Bay, which was a doubleheader with USA-Mexico. Actually, I might have been at that one too. I can't remember. I went to one game that was USA-Mexico. It was a 2-2 tie, and I only remember the game because very early in the match, the U.S. played the ball back to Casey Keller, who tried to clear it, and the Mexican striker jumped, and the ball hit his chest and went in the goal. And Mexico took it. I've never seen that before. I've never seen that since. So it's possible I've been in the top three, but these next two games are more recent, and I don't have any memory of them. So you tell me if you do. 2015, New England against Montreal, 42,947. And
against Montreal.
And last season, New England against Philadelphia, 41,355.
Yeah, there was a big match last season. The Revolution are definitely more popular when certain promotions or youth events, they can bring in a lot.
Both those games, the Montreal game from 2015 and the Philadelphia game from 2023, were in mid to late October. So maybe those fan appreciation night and discounted tickets or something. I'd like to know what's going on with those.
Well, the Revs used to be at the lower end of attendance going to games back in the day. Like, a big crowd would be 17,000, 18,000. Right. Often it was 13,000, 14,000.
Right.
And now routinely it's in the 20s. And it's not a surprise if it gets to 30. 65 is definitely going to be a once in a blue moon. But they are growing. And as we talk about in the news about a new potential Rev stadium, 25,000 seems a little bit small. I would like them to build something bigger, make the game more accessible for more people.
Yeah, especially if you get to the idea of a stadium where you don't have to drive there, then you could see attendance being a little bit higher. I wouldn't go much higher than 30,000 at this point, but I think that is a good point. You want to give them some opportunity. Well, anyway, as you say, a great night at Gillette Stadium. Even though the results didn't go the Revs' way, I think everybody got a little bit of what they wanted. And hopefully you got what you wanted listening to this podcast. And we'll be back to talk to you again soon.
Thanks for listening.
We thank you for listening to The Last Team on Turf, a New England Revolution fan podcast with Eric Warista and Noam Shore. We hope you enjoyed the show and can't wait to hear from you. The show was hosted, produced, and edited by Eric Warista and Noam Shore, and all opinions expressed are their own. Incidental music written, arranged, and performed by Eric Warista. Revs crowd clips appear courtesy of the New England Revolution.